What's up, gamers? Welcome to Battle Mallet Podcast, episode 66. Every rose has its thorn. For anyone that isn't familiar, the Battle Mallet Podcast is the journey of three busy gamers making their way to the Nova Open Convention every year, playing games that they love and balancing life with those games. My name is Jared Johnson, and tonight I am joined by Jason Table Noob Murray.
Hello. Good evening. Good morning. Salutations. I'm so ready to talk about another revamped Waband.
Yeah, and this episode is a long time coming. We've been busy. We did not get it out in a timely fashion, but it doesn't matter because it's coming out now. So if it wasn't obvious, we are going to cover the rewritten Thorns of the Briar Queen Warband in our standard Rivals review fashion in this episode. But before we get into that, we have played some games and done some activities recently, so we might as well cover some of that. So, Jason, I'm going to kick it to you first.
Wait, we've played games? No.
Yes.
Though that had not happened. Yeah, I'm still on the Beauty and the Beast train. Still working on my Void Cursed Gravebreakers deck. It's coming along nicely. First iteration, we definitely ran into similar windows with reactions, so had to learn how to navigate that. Still debating whether I want to Void Curse one of the zombies, or the wardrobe, as I refer to that model as, or if I want to actually go for the beast right away and just Void Curse him. It's worked out good in both scenarios, depending on what objectives I have in my hand. But I'm really liking some of their rules and or breaking of the rules. I love to just like tear up an objective and search for an object, an upgrade.
Yeah.
Like it's so nice. Like you go through your deck so quickly, you have what you really want in your hand. It's like very similar to the play style that I like to play, which is the first turn I do nothing but my own stuff and I don't care what you do. And then it turns into a mosh pit with people trying to kill each other. So, really enjoyed that.
I was going to say, before you move on from that, why don't you back up and talk about those reaction windows that you're running into, the reaction window problems? Because I think it's an interesting point, especially if people are trying to pair this warband with Void Curse Thralls.
Yeah, so the biggest ones are actually like in faction. So her spell reaction, where you can heal a fighter or do an additional damage, is kind of the same window as I forget the name of the card, and I don't have in front of me because you're going off script. But the card where you upgrade Furlane and he can have a reaction to her activation that allows him to either make a move or an attack action if her activation was not a super action. Well, they live in the same window. And then when you pair that with Void Curse Thralls, the upgrades that allow you to move to next to someone or move to an objective after a move or an attack. Well, if that is my move or attack after my activation, it blocks the same window. So there are just like those four card or like three cards in that reaction on her fighter card all live in that same after an activation or after an action window, which can be troublesome when you're trying to do it all. Like I really like the card where she makes an activation and then he reacts and attacks, but often you're wanting to heal because they do get beat up in order to survive. You really need to leverage that heal, and it can just get a little spicy and stack on each other.
Yeah. So for all of the listeners that are screaming the name of the objective or upgrade at us, it is Salvaged Intelligence.
There you go. Yes.
You obviously did not salvage your intelligence to remember the name of that card.
I remember the picture, like the face of the beast.
Yep. It is. Yep. You got it. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's, yeah. And that's an important, I just wanted you to bring it up because it is like one of the parts of this warband that can get really hairy, is with all of their reactions available, you have to watch those windows to make sure that you are timing things appropriately and making the right choices for what you're trying to accomplish. So,
yeah. Other than that, you know, the local scene is definitely growing. I believe we're up to 15 people now on a kind of regular basis, not all 15 at once, but rotating through. A lot of pickup games going on during the week, so that is very exciting here in the greater Raleigh area. And then what else is up with me? Other than a whole lot of work, a whole lot of birthday celebrations and in-laws in town, has been head deep into Loricana with my daughter. We had sets championships this past weekend. And luckily, because we only made it to one, we were supposed to go to three, but we made it to one. And of that one, I placed in the top four and was able to get the sweet enchanted Stitch card, which was the whole reason that we were going to these events. Emma's a huge Stitch fan, so luckily Dad pulled through.
Nice. Solid play. Solid dad move there, bud. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, you know. What about you? What have you been up to?
Yeah, so some Underworlds. I have been running around with the Skinnerkin, and they have done some work. I don't know if we talked about this the last time we recorded. I feel like we did, but they are big fans of two wound, one dodge fighters. So playing them into the new Zarbag's Gits was a pretty successful endeavor for me. And then you and I played, and I think it came down to one roll. There was one attack that you needed to succeed in order to swing things in your favor that didn't go through. And then Trace and I played an out of the box game, so using just the Rivals decks. I've been pairing the Skinnerkin with Tooth and Claw, calling it my fork and knife deck, but with some success. But Trace and I played a pure Rivals match, so, you know, a Winter Maw showdown against each other, and he super wombo comboed me in the opening round. I had put Grisla towards the front thinking that her four wounds were going to be enough to save her. And then he came in with, I know the fighter's names, the range two one, charged with the range two fighter, did two damage, played the card that you can react after dealing damage to deal another damage, and then played a ploy to push adjacent to me, and then played a ploy to inspire and damage me. So two damage in the action step, two damage in the power step, and Grisla was dead. And then it was just a very big uphill battle from there. I kept it close, but yeah, it ran away basically from that point on.
So he came with Jacob or Galvik?
Nope.
Two damage fighter.
Range two?
Range two? No range two, two damage fighters.
Oh no. Did he cheat when inspired? Are you on the inspired side?
So I'm not inspired.
Yep.
That would be Arcus.
Arcus. Yep. That's the one.
The Acolyte. Yeah.
Acolyte Arcus. Yep. Yeah. So that was fun, but I mean, I've had fun with them. Trace did a great job painting them as well. So it's always cool, to play with a painted warband, even if I didn't paint it. You wouldn't know anything about that.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you've played a couple of games of that with them. And yes, I do think that our local meta has shifted to the Mirrored City, but the haunch counters we thought were going to be difficult to get, it does not seem like they are difficult to get.
So as long as you have Grisla or Kretch alive, then you can really harvest some haunch counters. There's so much tech in that deck for adding dice that it's pretty easy to spike the crits for the prime cuts. But it's also easy to get successful attack actions. And so between those two things, most of the time when Kretch or Grisla attack, you're getting two haunch counters. And then I had the Karnskier go ham in that round, in that game, actually. So I think I managed to Grasping Talons three haunch counters in that game, which was very exciting. Discarded four for two spent glory. Discarded three to heal two, all after inspiring. So, yeah, as long as you can land your attacks, you'll get some. And then if you can stack dice to get those crits, then I think that they'll stack up. But I've seen some talk online where other people are saying that they're getting, you know, to six, seven, eight haunch counters by the time the game is over, which is really good. I think it works. They don't do a ton of damage in and of themselves. And so having those haunch counters to make sure that your attacks land, having the haunch counters to get the extra glory, having the haunch counters to heal, is all really useful. And then if you can just stack them up, they have a couple of end phases that are really spicy for having a lot of haunch counters. So
Sons of Elmorn or Flesh Eater?
I mean, my heart will always belong to Velmorn.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm having fun with them now. We'll see how things shake out, how the meta manages to swing itself. It's hard to give up Jedron's five wounds for a three wound fighter, but you do get a bat.
I just think in locally they have performed even better than I had thought.
Yeah.
They seem like, minus the like three or four warbands that are at the top, they seem very well balanced into what we play locally. Like,
yeah,
you know, we're not seeing the Heffalump on a weekly basis. We're not seeing Domitan. We're not seeing, like, you know, my goodness, George's warband that just won. Oh my lord, Headsman's Curse.
Headsman's, yeah.
Like, we're seeing just a really like a widespread of like B tier factions, and they seem to be doing very well. So
yeah, they seem right there, like a B plus tier. Yeah. Speaking of Domitan and Ephelim and all things exciting, it is April 22nd. For context, the Wintermaw Errata FAQ designer's commentary all just dropped, so we'll have some content around there. I'm curious to see how all of the hits to Force of Frost affect Domitan and Ephelim's Reign of Terror, but we'll see.
Well, seeing that you brought it up, I just have one quick hot take from...
All right, what's your quick hot take?
I think that the balance is well needed from the FAQ. Like, I'm not saying that like anything in here is wrong, but I do not like that they've completely changed wording on warband cards. I just think that it is harder. Like, we've done it with kind of like plot cards. We've done it with fighter cards.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, Arcane Mastery is completely changed now. Right? Score this immediately after a second or subsequent spell cast by the same friendly fighter in the same phase.
Yeah.
It's different.
And there have been a lot of changes that they've made. Some of them, I think, were clarifying changes and maybe bringing things into alignment with intent versus as written, especially where they've added the word same to a lot of cards. Anyway,
we don't need to get into all that.
Yeah, because if we start getting into it, we're going to spend the whole episode talking about that. My hot take is maybe Dagok Stablads come back out now that Hurt can charge and toot his horn at the same time.
I didn't read that one yet.
Yeah. Yeah, they removed the super action restriction.
Well, look at that. Already getting a little buff. Boost. It is really cool that we're seeing these, not rapidly, but more often than we have in the past. And I appreciate that they're swinging, like trying to make the game like both from a bring down power and bring up power for everybody. So I do appreciate it. And I can't wait to have the full episode.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, other than that, I started painting some Legions Imperialis. And I painted the X-Men, all of the X-Men mutant releases that came out for MCP.
Fantastic.
Last time we recorded. No, not fantastic.
Oh.
Uncanny.
Uncanny.
Astonishing.
Yeah. Anything but fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. They aren't releasing those. Excited about those pending releases for that coming down the pipe. Anyway, I think we'll drop it here before we start tangenting too far. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about the Thorns of the Briar Queen.
And we're back to talk about Thorns of the Briar Queen, part deux. So this is a 7-fighter warband. Oh my lord. There's lots of fighters.
So many fighters.
And the cool thing now is they all have actual names, so we don't have to make up names for them anymore. So poor Headless Nick is now the Uncrowned, which to me, he'll always be Headless Nick.
Yeah.
But want to start with the leader, like the Briar Queen herself, very potent fighter, a lot going on her fighter card. So she is a level 2 wizard. She does have the fly keyword. Range 2/3 fury for 2 damage right out the gate. So pretty potent there. Move 3, 2 dodge. Love to see the 2 dodge back and 4 wounds. She does have Wave of Terror. When this fighter supports a friendly fighter, if this fighter has 1 or more charge tokens, this fighter is considered to be 2 supporting fighters. There may be a little key there into how I would play these warbands, but she does give more support when she has a charge token. Varkloff the Cruel is kind of like the second in command, also a wizard, but just level 1. Fly keyword, 2 hammers for 2 damage is his attack on a range 1. And then he does have a action as well. And this has changed quite drastically from the original iteration. And this is now an action. Choose up to 2 friendly chain rasps, push each chosen fighter up to 2 hexes. You can then give each chosen fighter 1 charge token. So the cool thing is here, you can push the 2 friendly chain rasps any way that you want up to 2 hexes. They can already have tokens.
Yep.
But then they will get a charge token.
Well, you can. You don't have to give them a charge token.
Yeah, you can to charge everybody out.
Yeah.
So,
and take advantage of the Wave of Terror, which is on all of their cards. So they all have Wave of Terror. So they all count as
the double support, yep. Right?
Yep.
Cool. When he inspires, he does go to 2 dodge, keeps all that wonderful stuff with him. The Everhanged, which is one of the coolest looking chain raspy people, does have the chain rasp keyword, so he can be pushed by Varkloff. Has fly, 2 fury for 2 damage. That's kind of wimpy, and he's only on a single dodge, but he does have the reaction of throttle reaction. Use this after your activation step, so just an activation step, does not have to be him that or them or they that activated. Yeah. Roll 1 magic dice for each enemy fighter adjacent to this fighter on a roll of a channel or a crit. Stagger that fighter. Again, also has Wave of Terror. Then the next 4 fighters are your minions. They all have chain rasp and minions. They all have a 3 move, 1 dodge, 2 stat line. When they inspire, they go to 2 dodge and 4 move. And their weapons vary. I think the most notable here would be the Silence goes to 3 Fury and 1 damage, but has Stagger and Knockback. You have the Exhumed that goes to 2 Fury and 2 damage, and the Iron Wrench goes to 2 Fury, 2 damage when they're inspired. Well, how do they inspire, you say? They all inspire the same way. In the first inspire step in your turn, this fighter is adjacent to 1 or more enemy fighters. So you have to be adjacent to an enemy fighter at the start of your activation, very first inspire step. So they will inspire before you activate, but you have to be there at the start of your activation.
Right.
Yep. So very clear now.
Yeah. If you push adjacent during the power step, your opponent's power step, then when it leads into your turn, then you've met the condition. And you might be doing that anyway, because you might be giving your fighters charge tokens and then counting as double supports.
Still in action, which means you got to survive the whole turn sitting next to him.
Not if you do it in the power step, Jason.
Well, okay. I thought you were talking about Varklov's
push. No. Solemn March is not the way to do that. Solemn March is the way to get your chain raspies on objectives. Why would you want to be on objectives, Jason?
I don't know. Why don't you read one of the objectives we'd like?
Yeah, why don't we do that? So, standard review, now that we've covered the fighters, we're going to go through probably the three objectives that we think that you want to see early in the game, as well as the three gambits and three upgrades that you want to see early, just out of this Warband's deck. So we'll start with Bypass the Guards. This is a surge duel. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter makes a move action, which moved through one or more hexes that contained an enemy fighter, and that fighter ended that move action on a feature token. Nope, we didn't want that one.
I hate that one.
You do. And I did too after we talked about it. So forget it. We're not doing that one. We want Distract the Watch, which is also a surge.
So now, now we got to explain why I don't like that objective.
Yeah. Yep.
So you read it, and like it's a fine objective. I would say second to third round.
Yes.
Or if you have a way to get next to them, but without a move token or without a charge token, because you could still move.
Yeah.
But I don't like it in our first hand because all the fighters are three move.
Correct.
And you have to land on a feature token. So that means that like you just don't have a lot of room for error to move through somebody and get on a feature token. Yeah. So okay. Not a terrible objective, just not hand one.
Yeah, not. Yep. Yep. Instead, we want to Distract the Watch, not Bypass the Guards. This is also a surge duel. Score this immediately after an activation step if one or more friendly fighters are adjacent to an enemy fighter and two or more other friendly fighters are on objectives. So this is where Solemn March comes into play. You can set this up in your first activation by getting two fighters onto objectives, and then in your second activation, just
move or charge next to somebody.
Move or charge next to somebody. Yep, because you're probably going to miss anyway, so you might as well charge.
Just do it, or maybe one of the gambits that we have.
Yeah.
What also goes into holding objectives is my next objective that I'm going to select, and that is the Tide of Death. This is score this in an end phase if your warband holds more objectives than each other warband.
Nice.
I have seven fighters. I have a push where I can probably get two onto two.
Yep.
I just got to control that third one, and I get two glory.
I like it. You're a big fan of the hold more.
I like the hold more.
Yeah. So the last objective that we think you want to see early is take the city. Score this in an end phase if your warband holds one or more objectives and your warband holds each objective in one or more territories. So again, you got to push. You put a feature token in no one's territory. So now you're probably going to get at most two feature tokens in your own territory. You have an action to push two fighters. Should be pretty easy to set up.
Especially early while you still have all those fighters.
Yes, while you still all have all those two and one dodge fighters that we referenced are such delicious targets.
And what can help us achieve this even more is when we get into our gambits and gambit spells. And I'm going to start this one off with Sudden Mugging. One, I like the name of it. Two, it is a gambit spell cast on a focus. If cast, choose a friendly chain rasp. So I can select the Everhanged if I would like.
Yep.
Place the chosen fighter in an empty hex. Any empty hex. The chosen fighter is not adjacent to one or more enemy fighters, give the chosen fighter a charge token. So any hex, if it's not next to somebody, I give them a charge token. It helps me do the charge out. But more importantly, if this goes off on two dice from the Briar Queen, pretty good odds.
Yeah. It's like 75% chance.
Yeah. Put that Everhand right next to somebody. They inspire my turn. Now he's hitting with two hammers for two damage. I also could do your little objective.
Bypass the guards.
Just move through them to a feature token.
Yep.
The main thing for me is it helps me either one, get support, and two, to inspire a fighter.
Right.
And really getting to that two dodge is where this warband needs to live.
Yes. Yep.
So what's the next gambit for you?
Yeah. So I like Backshanker. So speaking of ridiculous repositioning, this is a reaction. Play this during a friendly fighter's attack action after the declare attack action step. Choose a friendly minion. Remove the chosen minion from the battlefield, then place that fighter in an empty hex adjacent to the target. Then you can give the chosen fighter a charge token. So Ooh. You can pick up one of your minions, set them next to your target, give them a charge token, all before you roll dice, so now you're getting double supports on that attack.
It's pretty spicy, and then if they survive the next round, they'll inspire.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I like that back shape, the back shanker. The shank of the back.
A sudden back shanking mugging.
Yes, there you go. But that one does not work on the Everhand. It has to be a minion.
Right. You could do the minion and then anyway.
I know. Okay. You know, and that all just synergizes with our last one. So terrifying advance. If you didn't have enough pushes, you may be able to get another one. So it says choose two friendly fighters. Stagger each enemy fighter adjacent to the chosen fighter. If there are no enemy fighters adjacent to the chosen fighter, you can push that chosen fighter one hex instead. Wow. This is like I'm setting it up.
Yep.
And I can get staggered.
The only limitation is that you have to have two fighters alive to use this card, because it does say choose two, not choose up to two. So,
but there's a lot of options here. Like it supports like getting a reroll.
Yep.
If I am next to somebody, which we definitely need given some of our attack profiles.
Yep.
And it's a double push. Like it's a stagger and a push. It's a double stagger. It's two pushes. It's and it's not limited to our minions.
Nope.
So thank you, Briar Queen.
It's pretty good.
It's really good. I really like that one.
So
all that goes into the upgrades.
The upgrades.
What's the first upgrade?
Yeah, so we're going to start with Awful Leer, which has just... That is the creepiest card art, I think. That is an Awful Leer.
It is.
So this has a Stare of Death reaction. You can use this once per round after this fighter's activation. Choose a visible enemy fighter within four hexes of this fighter. That fighter cannot make charge super actions in the next activation. So you could move onto an objective and then Awful Leer somebody that like the only fighter that maybe is in range to charge you that turn to help set things up or score or whatever.
Yeah. There's a lot of application with this. The first thing that comes to mind for me is the enemy fighter charged in and now I charge in with one of my fighters and I'm waiting for that secondary charge to come. This gives me a turn to say, nope, you can't charge with that guy that can reach me.
Yeah.
So then I inspire and go to the two dodge and hopefully attack the fighter that's next to me even more. I like that one. It does kind of stink. It's only once per turn, per round. But you know that might be a little tough if it was.
I mean,
all the time.
Explains why you want it early.
Yeah. All right. The next one is Horrifying Malice. While this fighter has one or more charge tokens, minus one dice from enemy fighter's attack actions to a minimum of one if the attacker is adjacent to this fighter. We've already gone over some ways to give fighters charge tokens. Minus one dice is always great. And your fighters may be on two dodge. Like that could be a really good defensive upgrade.
Yeah. And, you know, you could be forcing your opponent to get out of position to get rid of that penalty,
get rid
of the debuff, which is only going to be helpful as you're setting up your game and trying to prevent your opponent from what they're doing. The last upgrade that we want to see early is Driven by Hatred. This is plus one dice to this fighter's attack actions while this fighter has one or more charge tokens. So obviously the easiest way to do that is to just have that fighter make the charge super action. But there are other options for giving your fighter charge tokens. And then if everybody has a charge token, now you're charged out, so you can keep swinging away.
Fantastic. There are the cards. There's the fighter cards.
Yep.
I believe the next question is playstyle.
Playstyle. So we've talked about attacking things and we've talked about holding objectives. Feels like flex, aggro, and hold.
Yeah, I definitely think with their objective deck, they are a hold warband. The reason that gets a little blurry is because for them to inspire, they have to be next to somebody, and they become a lot better once they're inspired.
Yeah.
You know, one dodge, two wound fighters, not the greatest. So yeah, I would definitely say hold, flex, that Briar Queen hopefully doing some work for you on the attack.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Varklov's got four wounds too. So it's not like you're without fighters that have a chance to stay around, but.
Yeah. Varklov has a juicy upgrade too, where if you take someone out of action, you get an extra glory. So.
That's true. Yep. Up in that bounty is always nice. So, and then boards. I mean,
you got
seven fighters and seven starting hexes.
Yeah. This is where I'll give my little tech. And this was the older way to kind of set up thorns. And I've seen it locally already where people are starting to play them. And everyone thinks keep the Briar Queen, keep Varklov, keep the Everhang safe and like kind of use them to counter the push in. Pick a board where those three are leading. Your little ghosts are there to hold objectives. The other three are there to do all the heavy lifting. They have all the wounds.
Yeah.
In Nemesis, it's really hard to like one shot a four wound fighter. It can be difficult for some warbands to one shot a three wound fighter. Use that to your advantage. So pick a board that you can have really safe objective deployment and you're risking your three fighters because you're taking up every starting hex, but maybe one that's kind of center for the Briar Queen to get a range to attack for free or minimizing the charge threats of your opposing warband. So you're going to have those three up front. You don't want all of their fighters to be able to charge the Briar Queen. You want one. So get something that has a diversified starting line on the long board, or not the long board, but the wide side, and yeah. And go from there.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. I mean, just looking at the boards that came in the pack, I think I got to pick the worm burrow only because it's the hazard hexes are on the edge. So they're not blocking your objective placement. But you know, it's really hard not to pick what I think is the prettiest board in the game right now. The Glacial Tomb from Death Gorge.
Yeah. Glacial Tomb is what came to mind. Like, cause you can kind of have one of them up front, one of them aligned back, and then the other ones can like flex left or right just to minimize charges.
Yep.
I don't like the new boards only because you're going to be next to a lethal in most of them. And although fly protects you from moving, if you are driven into those lethals, ouchy wouchy.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can set the worm burrow up where the lethal hex is between you and your opponent, or icefall pits. Although icefall pits, if you do that, you have two like right on the front.
So yeah, don't do that. Worm burrow. Yeah. If you offset the worm burrow, you kind of get a really good deployment.
Yeah.
And then objective wise, you can probably get too deep into yours if you're offset. You just have to be really conscious of where you put your first objective and hope that your opponent doesn't block you out. So
nice. What are you doing against this, Jason?
You know, I'm going to do what I've done to Thorns for many years. I'm going to gobble up those two wound Griblies because there is no resurrection.
Nope.
They're a single dodge. If I can get to them, I'm going to eat them.
Yeah.
And if that is not an option, I'm not even worried about Varklov. I'm just taking down the Briar Queen.
Yeah.
Like, that is most of their offensive output. But yeah, let me eat up those two wound fighters, please.
Yes.
Five glory is good.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that there are four two wound fighters that's pretty tasty. Nemesis pairings.
I really think, like, I think masks will do them well.
Yeah.
I also like the stretch for, oh my goodness, Paths of Prophecy. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, they're through and through a hold warband.
Yep.
So I need that additional boost. Like for Thorns, I think you have to score 20. Like most of the time we're good with 15 to 16, but you for them, because they bleed so much glory, I want to score 20.
Yeah. You need the big wins when you can get them to offset that. I agree. I would wonder too about Rhyme Locked, because there's some hold tech in there that might pay out.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just like, I don't have enough games with the two new Nemesis decks or Rivals decks.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we talked about, like there's, yeah. Like Bane of Heroes, I think, is kind of like a pickup and play, but Rhymeworm's Bite, I think I need
to. Oh, I wouldn't run Rhymeworm's Bite. Not, no. You got too many chances to damage your own fighters and they're already on two wins.
So,
yep. All right. New player rating.
I think they're bronze. So,
yeah. And
only because they bleed so much glory. It's, I understand the appeal of them, and I think a lot of new players will pick them up because they are very straightforward and like, oh, they want to hold objectives and like there's, you know, like really good fighter. But I've just seen it time and time again. Like if you don't know how to use your activations properly and kind of mitigate those charges, they're just one dodge, two moon fighters. I've said it like four times. They're going to die.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think you're right. I think they have the potential to do really well, but they are not going to be the easiest to pick up and play. Not like Molog.
Molog.
Yep. Cool. Well, I think that's it. Any closing thoughts?
No. Just excited to see them back on the table.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody locally is painting them right now. Maybe we'll see him this week or next.
All right. With that, we'll be back with the outro.
And we're back, and that will wrap up this, the 66th episode of the Battle Ballot Podcast. As always, we want to say thank you for taking the time to listen. Thank you, Games Workshop, for sending us a Rivals of the Mirrored City box in advance to review, even if we didn't get the review out in advance. If you can like, subscribe, follow whatever your podcast app allows you to do, we would appreciate that. But I think that's it. I had a community shout out in mind. The Spent Glory blog, spentglory.com. Mr. Fishmode has been cranking out some beginner Underworlds player content of late. So I just want to shout that website out, shout him out, because I mean, he's been going through a lot of stuff that we all talk about on the different podcasts, but to have it out in writing and published in an evergreen format. So like one of his most recent ones was, so you just won the roll off. What do you do? So just giving insights into like specific aspects of the game, in ways that are very direct, I think is really helpful for new players. So if you're just starting or you want a take on, a new player's take on the game, go check out spentglory.com where you can read about getting started. Anything else going on, Jason?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I got a lot going on. We're going to Atlanta, so.
Yeah, you are.
You know, it'll be fun.
Not for Underworlds.
Not for Underworlds, but.
Cool. Well, for the Battle Mallet podcast. I am the chairman of the board.
I'm Headless Nick.
This is Jared signing out.
And I'm Jason Table New Murray. Get the hell out of here.
Peace.
Go Bills.
The Battle Mallet podcast is protected under the Creative Commons license. If you have further questions as to its use, you can find more information via links on podcast.battle-mallet.com. Music by Anno Domini Beats.
Whatever you would like to do, sir.
Whatever I'd like to do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's exciting.